And this is the reading from Lamentations 5. Remember, O Lord, what has befallen us. Look and see our disgrace. Our inheritance has been turned over to strangers, our homes to foreigners. We have become orphans, fatherless. Our mothers are like widows. We must pay for the wood we drink. The wood we get must be brought, must be bought. Our pursuers are at our necks. We are weary. We are given no rest. We have given the hand to Egypt and to Assyria to get bread enough. Our fathers sinned and are no more, and we bear their iniquities. Slaves rule over us. There is none to deliver us from their hand. We get our bread at the peril of our lives because of the sword in the wilderness. Our skin is hot as the oven with the burning heat of famine. Women are raped in Zion, young women in the towns of Judah. Princes are hung by their hands. No respect is shown to the elders. Young men are compelled to grind at the mill. The boys stagger under loads of wood. The old men have left the city gate, the young men their music. The joy of our hearts has ceased. Our dancing has been turned into mourning. The crown has fallen from our head. Woe to us, for we have sinned. For this our heart has become sick. For these things our eyes have grown dim. From Mount Zion, which lies desolate, jackals prowl over it. But you, O Lord, reign forever. Your throne endures to all generations. Why do you forget us forever? Why do you not forsake us for so many days? Restore us to yourself, O Lord, that we may be restored. Renew our days as of old, unless you have utterly rejected us and you remain exceedingly angry with us.
Amen. Amen. Please be seated. We're going to do something a little different today. We're going to sing the first verse of Is He Worthy? You guys, I think, have sung this song before. But this first verse is sort of the Lamentations verse. Now, we're going to resolve it and finish the whole thing after we do the Lord's Supper. So let's do this. This is that recall response song.
You feel the world is broken,
we do.
Do you feel the shadows deepen?
We do.
But do you know that all the dark won't stop the light from getting through?
We do.
Do you wish that you could see it all made new? We do.
I'm going to do it one more time.
Do you feel the world is broken?
We do.
Do you feel the shadows deepen? We do. Do you know that all the dark won't stop the light from getting through? We do. That you could see it all made new. We do.
Will Freeman was 38 years old, slacker. He doesn't do anything. He lives off royalties by a song created by his deceased father. He didn't even make the song. No job, no responsibility, no hobbies, no relationships. He's just trying to find women to sleep with, basically, is what he does. He talks about no man is an island. And he forgets that John Donne wrote that. He says it was John Bon Jovi. A little different, right? And he says, it's a great time to be an island. We got all the stuff we can do. We can distract ourselves. We don't need anyone else. Being an island is great, but sometimes you have to go visit the mainland. Now, I'm talking about a movie. Do we know what movie I'm talking about? It's about a boy, 2002. So if you haven't seen it, this is a spoiler alert, 22 years ago. So I feel okay. He decides he's going to try to meet single moms. This is his new strategy, right? So he starts in, and he meets one. So now he has to pretend like he likes kids. He does not like kids. So he starts hanging out with Marcus. He helps Marcus out a little bit, buys some shoes, gives some advice. But he certainly realizes that Marcus becomes too messy, too needy, too moody, and he's had enough. He says, Marcus, I can't help you with anything that matters. I can't help you with the real things. I can't help you with anything that means anything. I'm out. And Marcus says, you could try. Marcus needs a mentor. He needs a friend. His mom's not doing well. Marcus will do anything to make her happy. But Will says, peace out. There's a Seinfeld where somebody shares with Jerry this long litany of problems. And Jerry says, good luck with all that. And he just leaves. Like, I'm not helping. Peace out, Marcus. So, have you ever been Will? And have you ever been Marcus? Does anyone care? Am I really going to go through this alone? This job, this marriage, this relationship, this class, this disease, this battle. Lamentations has something for us, doesn't it? This is a rough book. Hasn't it been a rough book? It's intense. When you stop and listen to it, we've read it out loud, which is very unusual. It's way easier to skim over all this stuff. It's an ancient poem, and we've been talking about apathy, regret, shame, failure, struggle. Today we're going to talk about apathy. Israel's apathy. Israel is not apathetic right now, for sure. They think God is. 5:1. Remember, O Lord, what has befallen us. Look and see our disgrace. Remember us. We are so tired of being forgotten. We are going to cry out. And then they make these accusations. 2-16. We become orphans, fatherless. Our mothers are widows. We got to pay for the water we drink. The wood we must get bought. Our pursuers are at our neck. We are weary, given no rest. You've given us over. Our fathers sinned and are no more, and we bear their iniquities. Slaves rule over us. There's none to deliver us from their hand. We get our bread at the peril of our lives because of the sword of the wilderness. Our skin is hot as an oven with the burning heat of famine. Women are raped in Zion, young women in the towns of Judah. Princes are hung up by their hands. No respect is shown. Young men have to grind the mill. The boys stagger under loads of wood. The joy of our hearts has ceased. Our dancing has turned to mourning. The crown has fallen from our head. Woe to us, for we have sinned. Pain, anguish in the ruins. The cries aren't over yet. We're in another chapter of cries. Cries about God's judgment, an honest assessment, crying out in real time. In Jeremiah 9, remember Jeremiah Parr probably wrote both of these books, 19 and 20. Hear, O women, the word of the Lord. Let your ear receive the word of his mouth. Teach to your daughters a lament, and each to her neighbor a dirge. For death has come up into our windows. It has entered our palaces, cutting off the children from the streets and the young men from the squares. Speak, thus declares the Lord, the dead bodies of men shall fall like dung upon the open field, like sheaves after the reaper, and none shall gather him. And that's what's happened, isn't it? The house has become a desolation. Judah, Jerusalem, God's judgment on his people because they had not cared, they had not helped. There are tons of verses talking about helping the poor, helping the widows, helping the fatherless. and what happens when you don't. Proverbs 14:31, these are just a couple of them. Whoever oppresses the poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him. 19:17. Whoever keeps the commandment keeps his life. Whoever despises his ways will die. 31:8-9. These are the lightest ones, honestly. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. If somebody can't speak up for himself or herself, speak up for them. Defend the poor. Defend the needy. They hadn't helped. They hadn't cared. They'd passed over the needy, the oppressed, the sojourners, the widows, the fatherless, the mute, the poor, the refugees. And then they became them, didn't they? They didn't help the oppressed, and then they became oppressed, persecuted, unsafe, unstable, vulnerable, hungry, wandering. And they wonder, is this like the work complaint box, where we just put complaints in there and no one ever looks at them? That's what it feels like. They had been apathetic. Their sins, we're talking about their sins right now, are sins of omission. Not helping. Not caring. In Jeremiah 22:5, but if you will not obey these words, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that this house shall become a desolation. Lamentations 5:1. Remember, O Lord, what has befallen us. Look and see our disgrace. There was an earthquake in China in 2008. 70,000 people died. Caused $150 billion of damage. 10,000 of the dead were children. There's an HBO special about this called China's Unnatural Disaster. And think about it. China has this one-child policy, right? 10,000 kids gone. Families completely destroyed. But here's the deal. There were a lot of buildings in these small towns, especially, that every building stood except for one, the school. Whoever built these schools did not build them right. And they would go after either the earthquake, and the, you know, the parts that they had, the concrete was dust. So when the earthquake hit, those schools collapsed right on those kids. The kids were in there screaming, save us, save us. But the government, super controlling government, right, kept everyone away because they wanted to control the narrative. They wanted to guard the info. They said they wanted to keep the people away from the ruins, but that meant the kids weren't getting help. And they ignored the cries. And so the people started marching, which gave them real bad press. And they would send them home, but they would say, no, listen to us, listen to us. You're not listening. We want answers. Remember us. We are here. That's what it felt like. No one's listening. Israel's apathy, our apathy. Does anyone care? We hear about these crises after the fact. I think a good one is the Flint water crisis, right? We need clean water. Does anyone care? So we hear after the fact the disaster, the greed, the corruption, the pain, the death. I think some of you know I've been working on this project about Elizabeth McIntosh. She died in the basement of Covenant Seminary, where I went to seminary, in the chapel. She was a 50-year-old, a Scottish woman, single, so she was working to pay her tuition as a sort of a janitor, and she was brutally murdered in this men's bathroom on March 26, 1990. We're coming up on 34 years. It's still an unsolved mystery. So me and some other people, including my daughter, are trying to remember her. She's basically been forgotten and ignored even by the seminary. There's no plaque, there's no scholarship, there's no memorial, nothing is named after her. They don't talk about her. They don't tell you that it happened. Does anyone care about Elizabeth McIntosh? Feels like that. Remember what has befallen us. You guys may remember Brian Stevenson. He wrote that book, Just Mercy. There was a movie about it. So he's also started the Equal Justice Institute, and they've been placing markers at lynching sites across the U.S., like this marker out here, like the historical markers. From 1882 on, any guess how many lynchings we can count? 4,384. 654 in Mississippi. Does anyone care? Do we mark those things? Okay, so that's not in our situation anymore, hopefully. Really now, we're mostly probably talking about refugees. Refugees would say, our inheritance has been turned over to strangers, our homes to foreigners. We have become orphans, fatherless, our mothers are like widows. We got to pay for what we drink. That sounds like refugees. There are 20 million refugees. Resettlement for refugees, 1%. 1%. And it usually takes 10 years. And then you get placed somewhere, you don't speak that language, you get like 3 months rent, and you got to figure it out. Good luck. Is anyone listening? Does anyone care? Does anyone help? Does anyone welcome us? I don't know what you think about these commercials, right? He gets us. They're sort of controversial. But there's one that says Jesus was a refugee too. So he knows what it's like. Now, we're not in these situations, but we might feel like, Marcus, does anyone care about me? I just lost my child. Does anyone care? Does anyone care about the shame I carry around? Does anyone care about the chronic illness that I have every day? It's a daily struggle, and I got to pretend like I'm fine? Does anyone care that my wife doesn't respect me? Does anyone care that my husband doesn't love me? The irony of all this is social media, we think everyone cares about everything. I mean, apparently everyone needs to know what I just ate. I didn't even make it. But, I mean, I get it. I do that too. We post pictures about everything, and we hate it when someone doesn't like it or comments or thinks we're crazy. And we do that to other people too, don't we? So I'll attack someone else so I don't get attacked. Or the opposite. We retreat, clam up, turn our backs, and lock down. That's how we'll deal with it. I've tried this strategy several times. I remember Julie and I were having some sort of argument, and I decided to stop talking to her, and I carried that on for 2 days, 3 days. I wouldn't talk zero. I would say hi in the morning, whatever, and she's confident in Christ, so this did not affect her that much. And she would say, like, when are you going to start talking to me again? And I'll say, what? What do you mean? I'm just being normal. Okay. Right? You know, you usually talk a lot. this is different, right? So that worked great. It was a great strategy, wasn't it? Really effective. No, it was so immature beyond belief. I had a friend who got broken up with, and he sort of tried the same strategy, except he turned off his heart for years. I am going to not care about anything. I am not going to feel anymore for years. That's funny, too, because he called me this week, and he was really mad at me about something, and I got to ask for his forgiveness. And I was thinking about he would have never done that when he was in that phase of life. But he was mad. It's like, it's good to be mad. Being mad is way better than not caring. The joy of our hearts has ceased. Our dancing has been turned to mourning. Ann Weems has written a book called Psalms of Lament. It's a book of Psalms of Lament that she wrote after her 20-year-old son died. She had a mentor, and she said writing laments might help you get through the grief, so she started. Her mentor eventually asked, because he was teaching a seminar, if he could use her Psalms of Lament with these other people. When she asked him why, he said this: because throughout history, the faithful have marched to the throne of God and cried their pain. In your cries, you are voicing the sobs of other people. So she agreed. And then not too long after that, she started getting calls and emails and letters. Because people realized these were the truest things there were. Grief isn't healed by 10 steps or self-help books. This is a help we need that's beyond help. And our only hope is to march to the throne of God and cry out. So we may want to like take a moment and discern a little bit, not in a judgmental way, but in just an honest way, our care quotient. There are some things that we might care too much about and some things we might care too little about. I realized, so when I moved to Fells, it's sort of a big soccer community down there. And there are soccer bars. And they all gather and watch, you know, their team at a certain place. So it's all the same fans around. And so I picked West Ham. I don't watch soccer. So I picked West Ham because they had sort of the colors I liked. And it was at the pub that I liked going to. And I said, oh, I'm going to be a West Ham fan. I don't want to pick the best team. I don't want to pick the middle team. And so just recently, so I bought a shirt, and I never went because I realized I don't care about soccer. And I don't need another thing to care about, right? Let's just drop that off the list. I'm happy that people like soccer. I'm happy to watch soccer. I don't need to know all the teams because, you know, there's thousands of these things. It's never ending. It's a deep dive. So even just 2 days ago, I saw a person who I sort of see sometimes, and he was wearing the jersey of West Ham, the team I picked. And I went to my car, because I had it in there, and I got my shirt, and I gave it to him. I said, here you go. It was a nice one. I said, I don't care about this. You do. I'm giving it to someone who cares. So maybe you care about things too much. Maybe you care about two things a little. But we often just disengage altogether because we don't want to be vulnerable. And we think, how many tears do I need to drink? I'm going to share with you two resources. Now we're getting to Jesus, his unapathy. Maybe you mentioned this before. Every Moment Holy. This is a really cool book. The first version, I think I mentioned, it's the one that has all these weird prayers about like a prayer before folding laundry, a prayer for beekeeping. Whoa, weird. This one is about grief. And it's just beautiful and wonderful. Mourning with those who mourn. Some of it's, at the loss of a child, at the loss of a parent, at a miscarriage, the loss of a spouse, natural disasters, the loss of a famous person at a bedside vigil, thinking of your own funeral, chronically ill. So this is an important resource. The other one is this one. I think this is the very best book on grief of all time. It's called Tear Soup. There's no better book about grief than Tear Soup. Psalm 3. Talks about how many tears we are going to cry. And there are all these lament songs, right? Oh Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation of him who is in God. There is hope and joy ahead, but we have to go through the lament, don't we? We don't have to pretend we have it all together. We don't have to pretend we're fine, adjusted, and achieving. We can be curious and wonder and step into pain. It's the space between where we are and where we want to be is this grief lament space. In a lost relationship or a broken promise or a major blow or an unrealized expectation, sometimes we gotta make soup, tear soup. In his book, 9 Things You Simply Must Do, number 4 is do something. Even if it's the wrong thing, do something. Walk, support group, sign up for something, write these lament songs, find a new hobby. There will be other better solutions coming up at some point, but you gotta go do something. Lament is one of those things. And there are all these laments in the Bible that give us a picture of them. As we wonder, will God be there? That's way better than wondering, is there a God? Do I live in a universe that's impersonal? That is way less hope than will God listen? Lamentations is crying out, will God care? You know, God's people didn't care. Now they wonder, will God remember us? Is this like the Chinese government? Are we being shut out? You know, and there are these questions that get asked by Jesus. Jesus is in a storm in the middle of the lake, sleeping. Okay, now this one, you know, being on the ocean, what the heck? Jesus, I can't believe, I mean, this one is hard. I was on this last trip, I have this little cabin that's not where everybody else is, and there was a beeping going on, but I couldn't hear it. So one of the women is knocking on my door, 1 a.m, and she's like, dude, the beeping, make it stop. Well, the problem is the beeping is for the methane indicator. Like, if it goes off, it's saying the boat might blow up. Okay, so do you turn off the methane beeping thing? I don't know. It's super annoying. I'd rather at least die without a beeping. But, you know, does anyone care? Who do we call? So we unhooked it. I don't know if that was a smart choice, but I didn't think, like, what level of methane could there be in here? Like, what are we talking about? So they come to Jesus, sleeping. And they say to Jesus, what do they say? Lord, do you care that we're perishing? Great question, I think. So Mary and Martha, right? Dinner party? Mary, not happy. Martha, not happy. Martha, not happy. She goes to Jesus, her friend. She says, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Yo. I think she has a finger in his face, honestly. Like this, I mean. She does it again in John 11, right? Jesus shows up late. Jesus, where you been, yo? You could have saved my brother. Don't you care about this? I think Martha is like the Peter. You know, they just say whatever they're thinking, which is beautiful because we get to read it, right? Judas never hardly talks in the whole thing. I think he would have done better if he would have talked more. He's just mad to himself. These accusations to Jesus, because these people are just people. I mean, they're in the Bible, but they're normal people in normal families, in normal cities, with normal governments that don't care, with normal problems. They know that there's secrets. They know they're busy. They know that God is way up there. 19. But you, O Lord, reign forever. Your throne endures to all generations. Why do you forget us forever? Why do you forsake us for so many days? You reign forever up in your throne. You're far away, God. I can remember so many nights lying in bed, so frustrated, so angry about whatever. And I couldn't sleep. And so I would try to pray, and I would pray. And sometimes I would hear God say, I'm here. And that would make me so mad. Okay, if you're here, what are you doing? Could you fix her? Could you fix me so what she's doing doesn't drive me crazy? I'll take that. Get going on this. And then he would say, I'm here. I don't think in a frustrated way. I don't think in a condescending way. But in a like, I'm here. Then the next level is entering the pain and suffering of someone else. That's a deep commitment, to enter the pain of someone else. But that's what Jesus did, didn't he? He has a covenantal love, which means deep commitment, forever bonded, covenantal hesed love. And he's Emmanuel with us, so he knows what's going on. And that's what drove him to the cross, isn't it? That is a lynching. And the temple became real localized in him, didn't it? And God destroyed the temple yet again. He had just destroyed it, 587. They built it back up, but then it got destroyed, not even just in 70 AD, they destroyed it in Jesus. The temple, the one who had made everything, exactly right, destroyed. Jesus was bulldozed, not the physical building, the person. And that teaches us the way to the throne is death and disaster. Power and position become poor and powerless. Jesus took up the causes that had been ignored all this time by Israel itself. And he took the punishment for the ignoring. So that means he takes our sins of omission and commission. The crown has fallen from our head. Woe to us, for we have sinned. That's right. That's right. It's true. And God turned his back on Jesus on the cross, didn't he? When Jesus cried out, where are you? Where are you? He did not hear, I'm here. And he said, why have you forsaken me? So we talked about it is finished last week, but also remember, why have you forsaken me? That means we can be brought in because he was forsaken. So when we're alone, do something and let someone in and look to Jesus and cry out to him, lament to him. He was abandoned so we can be accepted. We can be listened to, understood, and taken seriously. Jesus wept. He knows. Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. So we can take to him our angers and our hallelujahs. We can take to him our laments and our laughters, because our psalms are not finished. there is more grief coming. Okay, so Will Freeman, he decides to go to Christmas dinner with Marcus and his mom. His normal Christmas is drinking all day long and watching scary movies. So he goes to this crazy family dinner. He gets presents and gives presents. He has an altercation, but he goes home and he goes like, what's this weird feeling I have? What's this salty discharge from my eyes? Oh, I care about them. Wow, I've never felt this way anymore. And a little bit later, Marcus gets in a little bit of a trouble, and Will helps him. Like, that is something he's never done before, in public. He enters in. Will gets vulnerable because he cares. And what happens? It changes Marcus. It's redemptive for Marcus. And it's redemptive for Will. Because no man is an island. We need each other. We're not alone. And even in the darkness, there's a new day. There's always a rooster around the corner. A new day will come. I can't tell you how long it's going to take. But the sun will shine again at least. Now, I don't have a ton of time, but I'm going to dip into this for a second. I said it's the best book on grief, and we're talking. There was once an old and somewhat wise woman whom everyone called Grandy. She just suffered a big loss in her life. Pops, her husband, suffered the same loss, but in his own way. This is the story of how Grandy faced her loss by setting out to make tear soup. For many years, the custom of making tear soup had been forgotten. As people's lives became more rushed, they found it much easier to pull soup in a can from the shelf and heat it on the stove. But several years ago, Grandy got a taste of well-seasoned tear soup, and one of her friends made it from scratch. Because of her great loss, Grandy knew this time her recipe for tear soup would call for a big pot. With a big pot, she would have plenty of room for all the memories, all the misgivings, all the feelings, and all the tears she needed to stew in the pot over time. So she put on her apron because she knew it would get messy. It seems that grief is never clean. People feel misunderstood. Feelings get hurt. Wrong assumptions are made all over the place. To make matters worse, grief always takes longer to cook than anyone wants it to. And then, Grandy started to cry. First she sobbed. Sometimes she wept quietly. Sometimes when she was a safe place where no one could hear her, she even wailed. She knew she had to make much of her part of her soup alone. She learned from past experience that most people don't like being around tears. Her friends would worry if they knew just how many tears Grandy's recipe would call for this time. Grandy winced when she took a sip of the broth. All she could taste was salt from her teardrops. It tasted bitter, but she knew this is where she had to start. And for now, it was the only thing on her menu. There were things that Grandy never wanted to forget. They included good and bad times, silly and sad ones. Eventually, she ran out of things to add. Her arms ached, and she felt stone and empty. There was no words to describe the pain she was feeling. What's more, when she looked out the window, it surprised her to see how the rest of the world was going on as usual while her world had stopped. So other people come over, they give her thoughts that aren't good, they try to make her stop doing it. She has a good friend who comes over and just makes it with her. They go for walks. Her husband makes it differently. This one says, Grandy kept attending worship even though she was mad at God. She sometimes yelled at God and asked why this had happened, and sometimes she demanded to know where God was when she was feeling all alone. Still, Grandy trusted God, but she didn't understand God. She sensed that people believed that if she really had faith, she would be spared deep sorrow, anger, and loneliness. Grandy kept reminding herself to be grateful for all the emotions that God had given her. Sometimes people would ask her questions like, is it soup yet? Or how long is it going to be taken? You've been at this over a month now. It's time to get out of that kitchen. I'll stop. Maybe you can pick that up sometime when you need it. Ultimately, our secret weapon in all this is the resurrection, isn't it? That gives us power. Up from the grave he arose. Up from the grave he arose. There will be a new day. The rooster crows for you, even today. Amen.